Welcome back to the Morningstar Men's Weekly Podcast. This one was recorded on July the 25th. Boy, another month almost gone. July the 25th. Next time we meet, it will be August. Speaking of August, let me tell you about the breakfast that we're doing on the 8th of August. Starts at 8 a.m. in the morning right there in the East West Cafe at Morningstar. Our theme for the morning is keeping your team together. We're going to focus on the important task of identifying what are the most important groups of people in your life that you need to keep united. Who are you responsible for leading as a team? And making sure that we're all leading the most important teams with the greatest level of effectiveness. All right, hope to see you there. Cost is $6. Please bring a friend. If you're not a regular attender of the morning, the Saturday morning life school, hey, why don't you think about making an exception to that for this one Saturday? Show up for some good face-to-face fellowship time. All right, on to this week's topic. This week we are looking at what I'm referring to as the wisdom supply chain. How do we get from general purpose information out there in the world to actionable information that we call wisdom, and then on through to the results that we produce in our lives? What are the steps in that process? Where can that supply chain break down? What do we do to identify some of the breakdowns in that chain and then make corrective measures? All right, so without any further delay, let's get on with this week's teaching. Are there any others? Do we have any lingering urge? Are there any budding comedians here yet? Are there handouts yet? Okay, does everybody have one? Excellent, thanks. Okay, so at first blush, as we go through this, you're going to think, well, this is rather boring and we've kind of covered all this before, but I want to do this visually. Obviously, you can see I didn't give you many notes. I want you simply to look at this and consider a process. So when you hear the phrase supply chain, what comes to mind?
Product.
And? Okay, the movement and the tracking of products. So, in order for there to be a Barbie doll on the shelf at the Walmart, what has to happen? Well, someone's got to put it there. Okay, so that means that it needs to...
You've got
to
make one.
Okay, why don't we start in China where the Barbie doll is made? Right, so the Barbie doll has to be made, which means somebody has to anticipate that there's going to be a need for X number of Barbie dolls this quarter, and so they put in an order to some factory in China where 1,000 underpaid people produce Barbie dolls.
A group full of guys, you're going to use Barbie dolls.
That's what I was just thinking.
Well, see, now we'd stir up a controversy about gun control. Let's just stick to Barbies.
I can control my guns.
Quite a Harley, Jim.
Okay, so what has to happen then?
They got to get from Milwaukee to somewhere.
Well, the first thing, if they're in China, they're still over there, right? So we've got to put them in containers. Then we've got to track the movement of those containers across the ocean. They've got to be offloaded, presumably, somewhere in California or wherever. And then they've got to do what? Then they've got to move across the country, and they've got to be strategically positioned to different warehouses. And then an individual store has to assess what they think they need, and then X number of Barbie dolls are loaded onto a truck. The truck delivers Barbie dolls to various stores. And then it's still not done there. Because then the product is tracked until it's sold or until they feel that they can't sell it anymore, at which time it's liquidated. So it is the continuous tracking, monitoring, and delivery process of taking product and getting it in the hands of consumers. All right, now, then let's apply that to the concept of wisdom supply chain. So the first thing in the oval up there, we're going to call information. And incidentally, for those of you who say, well, this doesn't sound much like a spiritual study, believe me, it is, because we're immersed in this every single day of our lives. So what is information? Absolutely anything out there. Absolutely anything, and we'll call information something that is not already inside of us, as distinguished from the next oval, which is then going to be knowledge. All All right, so information being everything and anything that is available to us that is outside of who we are, and then what is knowledge? It is the collection of information that we have absorbed and now has become part of us. I'm going to run out of room for ovals. I can see that. The next one is understanding. So as to distinguish knowledge from understanding, what is understanding?
That's kind of what the process of the first two. Kind of. I mean, understanding is how the first two kind of interact with each other. And then you utilize that for, I think, what you're going to write next.
Okay. So understanding is the relationship that I have between the bits of knowledge that I've absorbed. So if I have a piece of knowledge over here and I have a piece of knowledge over there, both internalized, but I see no relationship between them, then I don't have understanding as to how the two fit together. To illustrate this, has someone ever told you two facts that you already knew, two pieces of information that you already knew, but you never knew how they were connected, and as soon as you find out how they're connected, there's an aha moment that takes place? That is understanding. It is the connecting of what is already inside of you to make it useful in some way. And that's what distinguishes understanding from just raw trivia. And then we go, obviously, to the W, which is wisdom. Now, in light of everything that we've talked about so far, what is wisdom then? It's the ability to take the things that I now understand, the relationships of knowledge that I have, and be able to do what? Put it to practical use. So we said that wisdom is the ability to make the best possible choice in any circumstance. Okay, so you see where we're headed here. All right, now, all this is useless unless we get down to the next one, and you can assert your own thing if you don't like my word, but we're going to call it goals. Anybody want to give me a working definition for goals? Something to work towards with a timeline about it, a fixed deadline by which you'd like to have it.
Working towards a fixed point or something like that.
So let me give you a broader definition, because remember, we're prepping all of us for the series in the fall, but I also want this to be very practical to you, because some of you are going to say, well, I'm not comfortable with the idea of setting a lot of goals. I'd rather be guided by God. So here's an operating definition. Goals constitute the life you hope to live and the people and the things that you hope to live it with. The life you hope to live and the people and the things you hope to live it with. And very little falls outside of that. All right. So because I don't know how to write small, we'll just move to the top. But I'll be forced to write small because now I don't have as much room for ovals. All right. So then the next, the A and the E, are action and effort. We're just going to go through these, and then we're going to come back and we're going to analyze them. And the final one, I'm not even going to ask if you understand what action and effort are. Obviously, that is pertaining to the distance between where you are now and the goals that you have. And the next one is accomplishments. It is a C on your paper, right? Or an A and A. Accomplishments and failure. I was writing the C, so I naturally said C. I have a real problem with that. To have problems?
That's normal for the way you're looking.
Okay. All right, so this is the process beginning to end. Information, everything that's in the world out there, knowledge, what I have in me, understanding how the knowledge is linked to be useful and beneficial, wisdom, what I do with it, the goals, the things that I said about the life that I want to live and the people and the things that I want to live it with. This being the process of taking me from this, which is, now I'm going to introduce another word, virtual. Virtual threshold. The only problem is this. At 1 o'clock last night when I did this, I put the line at the wrong place. So you need to move that line down between goals and action and effort. In that way, your paper will start to look a little bit more messy, like this board up here.
I'm not sure you're wrong with that.
No, I really am, and I'll get to that in a minute. All right. Do you know anybody that talks about things that they would like to do but never gets anything done?
Sure.
Do you know... You don't need to be a self-confessor this morning. If you'd like to, you can.
More often than not, I see a whole bunch of things that I want to get done that I should get done. But more often than not, too, I fail in getting those things done. A lot of unfinished projects. Why? Finish something. Well, because I'm too busy over here. I'm too busy helping out over here or doing this or doing nothing. I'll just keep going.
But I think that there is a lot of, in general, and I'm not talking about the fact that you happen to want to be an overachiever and so you have half your house torn apart at the same time because you're very excited about starting things, but then reality settles in and... Why are there so many things talked about and never begun is a big question. Why are there so many things that we say we want this, we'd like that, we'd like to live here, we'd like to accomplish this thing, and yet nothing but talk ever happens? And so we're going to have to explore that. Because all this up to here is not very... Well, have you ever lived with the guilt of things that you felt you should do but didn't ever get around to doing? So this is the measure by which all this is we tell if it's real in our lives. Okay, so now, the four little circles, you should be able to fill them in. And you have by now more room on your paper than I have on my board. But yes, well then you write as big as I do. We're going to talk about the four different types of people again. The simple, the foolish, the wise, and the wicked. But now we're going to talk about them in relationship to this process. So this is wisdom's supply chain. From everything that is out there to focused knowledge, which leads to understanding, which informs the actions that I want to take toward the goals that I have, and then prompts specific effort that leads to results. And at the end of this, incidentally, if you have room, unlike myself, who doesn't, but if you were to have room, you could then go from there and you could off to the side just draw a conventional feedback loop. Because this is what happens when you start to have accomplishments. When you have results produced, does everybody know what a feedback loop is? I do something, I evaluate the results of that, I adjust the process, and I return and I do it again. That's a standard feedback loop. All right. Now, do you see how this is important, not just for kids, but for adults, how this is something that we all need to learn, and yet very few of us understand this process looked at like this?
Pull out any one of those pieces in your threshold. Pull out any one of those. Where's it go?
Well, if you pull out any one of them, it's like the Barbie dolls that don't get on the shelf.
What happened when you break the supply chain?
Something doesn't get delivered in the way that you want it. Now, that brings up the next thing. The little eye down there at the bottom. These are called interrupters. What are the things that insert themselves in the middle of the supply chain? That was a very astute observation, Jim. What are the things that insert themselves in between these components and can break the process? Or a different way to ask the question is, what happens when I get these a little bit backwards? Remember we talked about that last week. Remember we said that for most of us, this supply chain looks a little different. At least it starts out looking different. It actually starts out in many of our lives looking like this. So we put our goals here, and we'll call it pseudo-wisdom here, which means that at this point, I set goals before I am wise in how to understand what I should want, and therefore I pursue things maybe that I shouldn't want, but what do? I chase the things that will help me get what I said that I want.
You can take that wisdom and just wipe it right off, because you're going to go from goals right back to information. You're never going to get wisdom. You're going to accomplish it.
Okay, you're not going to get true wisdom, but you're going to get the wisdom that you hunger for. Remember we looked last week at people tend to go after information that tickles their fancy, that pleases what they want to hear. Instead of getting the things that they need to hear, they pursue the things they want to hear that will help them get to where they want to get.
But then that's knowledge, right? Essentially, that's knowledge. You never really get that wisdom that you need because You're not doing it in order. What you end up with is just more knowledge about how to do something.
Well, do you remember what Paul says? He says that there's worldly wisdom and then there's wisdom from above.
Okay, yeah.
That was James. That's not Paul. There's worldly wisdom and there's wisdom from above. So there is the wisdom that we pursue that we think is wisdom because it helps us to accomplish what we want. Okay, so let's look at some of the interrupters then. What do you think some of the interrupters are? Just anywhere in there. Okay, well here's a couple of them. Here's three of them right here. Because remember, we're not going to know whether we have a... How does Walmart know if they have an effective supply chain?
Well, Walmart's pretty tech savvy. They got GPS on every timeline.
Now, in the most simple of terms, how does Walmart know if they have an effective supply chain? They have enough Barbies to satisfy the need of every girl who wants a Barbie without having thousands of Barbies left in stock at the end of the Barbie season. That's how they measure it. End of story. They have achieved what they wanted. The result is good. Do you see how complicated that is? What is the result? Remember we said, what are goals? The operating definition we're going to use for goals? Anybody?
The life you have to live and the people and the things you have to live with.
That's very good, except you're reading off your notes what you just wrote down. At least he wrote them down, right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's the one here seeking information. Awesome. Good job, guy.
All right. In order to understand the interrupters, we have to look at this stuff that we have looked at before that maybe you thought was dry theory. Here are three interrupters. We don't always give our best to the process. Are you ever lazy? You ever say you want something and then you really don't pursue it the way it would need to be pursued in order to achieve what you wanted to achieve? And we're not even going to talk about whether you want to achieve is good for now. We're going to assume, just for the sake of this argument right now, we're going to assume that you actually have this correctly ordered and you have wisdom before goals. But if you actually have goals before wisdom, which a lot of us do, or a lot of us have, and certainly our children will, well, then that has to be reordered right off. And incidentally, the first part of this was just to understand the process. The second part of this is to understand how we share wisdom. Is there anyone in your life right now that you think that it is at least partly your task to help to bring to a greater level of maturity and understanding? Or at least someone that you want to partner with and to help them to become more wise in their decision making, setting better goals, achieving better outcomes? And if there is anyone that you have that you can say, yeah, that's true for me, well, then you need to understand how the process of accumulating wisdom that's actionable really works. To put that into perspective so you really get it, have you ever sat down face-to-face with your 10- or 12-year-old child and dispensed all the wisdom of the universe that you have inside of you? We call that a lecture. And what have been the positive outcomes of that? It normally doesn't work real well. And it's because we have an outcome in mind, but we don't understand the process to get to the outcome. And we're frankly a little impatient. Because in addition to having that one or two people that you would like to share this with and you would like to quickly grow them up into an adult in 5 minutes or less, you have other things on your plate that you have to deal with. All right, so we don't always give our best to the process. Yes?
So when you provide that information, say in an example of your own child, when you provide that information, are you going through this kind of step process with them a little bit?
Oh my word, no, or their eyes would glaze over. You are the adult in the room. I want you to understand how this works. I don't want you to think that you need to share all this with your kid.
No, I don't mean that. Like, if you provide them the information, then you give them time to kind of understand it or to be able to absorb it. That's what I mean by it. I don't mean by, like, well, first we're going to cover the information.
And get your whiteboard out when you do it, too.
Yeah. But do you kind of go through this process with them, like, on set and, like, give them time when you're talking about being patient? And if you want to kind of provide them information about life and growing up and that type of thing, are you going through this process with them?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
But I mean, let's just use your football goals as the thing. You get to the goals, they fail miserably. You think you set them up with information, knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. They try it. They fail miserably. They come back to you in tears. They don't know what to do. They're upset, whatever. What do? We're right back to the top again. Start off with information gently. Start off with information. Where did you go wrong? What did you do? How did it go? Well, what's your understanding? Tell me what your understanding of this really is. Maybe we didn't have that part of the conversation. All right, well, sounds like we have a good grasp of it. What did you actually physically say? What did you physically do? Well, I did this. Okay, there's your mistake. You go back to the thing again until they get the... Until they get to the...
Well, failure is part of acquiring wisdom.
Well, and even up here at this part in the process, to come back to what you're talking about, you might want to, and I'm hoping that you left a little bit of room off to the side to write. This was my goals. Part of having wisdom is having reasonable expectations. Okay, have you ever been a project manager, and what's one of the general rules of project management? Everything usually takes 2 to 3 times as long as you expect it to and costs 2 to 3 times as much. And hopefully if you become a better project manager, you weed that down a little bit and it becomes a little bit more realistic. But when we have unrealistic expectations, we set ourselves up to assume we have failed simply because we didn't reach a particular outcome by a particular date. All right, so we don't always give our best to the process. That's one interrupter. We can't always give our best to the process. It's a very different one. Now, why is that true?
Physical limitations. Man's got limitations.
Every one of us has limitations. I mean, we got all this that we're dealing with, right? On a regular basis, we have all this that we're dealing with. The fact that we have mixed... Well, have you ever tucked inside of you had goals? That if you were to, and this is why I want us to step outside of ourselves. This is helpful because you can step outside yourself and look at your own supply chain. Have you ever discovered that you have two goals that it would be impossible to meet at the same time because in the end they're contradictory? In other words, you can't have the time to think and meditate and be that kind of a person and at the same time have huge accomplishments every day. Because there's only 24 hours in the day. And so we set goals, and the goals are contradictory to each other, but we never look at them at the same time, and we never look at them as a whole. And kids do that too. Well, kids do that a lot, but we would think that adults grow out of that, but the reality is that we become better at what we practiced when we were young. So if we practiced wanting too much when we were young, what do we become masters at when we become adults? We become the exact same thing, except more of it. So what happens, okay, I'm going to step on a few toes. What happens when we tell our kids that they can be everything, do everything, participate in everything, and then they become adults?
You better be willing to take the time if you're going to tell them that. You better be willing to take the time that it takes to teach them everything, to show them everything, to give them all the information that they need. Because if you say that you can be anything, and you just say, you...
Well, and here's one of the difficult things, and we talked about this in goals that contradict each other. You cannot be good at everything. You can't even be reasonably good at many things. As a matter of fact, if you set out in your life to be really good at one thing, there's a lot of things that you're going to be horrible at.
How many have heard of Bo Jackson?
He's
good at everything. He's good at baseball, football. He can play all those sports. And one hit. Boom, he was done. He thought he was good at everything. Turns out. No.
So coming back to the we can't always do our best. So Bill comes in this morning, and we were joking a little bit about his tan and how he got his tan playing golf and swimming at the pool or whatever and all this stuff. And then I said, and I guess you must have to squeeze in a little bit of work now and again. And he said, yeah, but it is a real inconvenience. And we knew that was joking, but sometimes the necessities of life squeeze out what we believe is the important stuff that we would like to do. So part of whether it's helping a child or whether it's helping us, and frankly, sometimes I think we need to help ourselves understand that we're just going to have to compromise. We're going to have to set standards, and decide what's really important. This is one of the hardest things for people to do. I'm in the middle of reading a book about simplifying life. Of course, that just added one more thing for me to add to my reading list. But in the process of reading the book about simplifying life, the author takes the readers through this process of something so simple and so stupid. He says, do you have too many clothes in your closet? Do you have clothes you haven't worn in 6 months or 6 years or whatever? And he says, here's what happens. He said, most people who are in the business of helping other people organize at home, they're simply helping them to make the choices that they don't have the courage to make themselves. They're simply helping them to see the obvious that was obvious to anyone else but the person who had the closet full of clothes. And so here is the ultimate question that he asked. He says, so we have all these clothes laid out. And he said, there should be a very small bin for the clothes that you keep and a very big bin for the clothes that you're going to take to the local thrift store. He says, but most people start to, as soon as your back is turned, have that favorite thing and they grab it out of the thrift store bin and they start to put it back into their own bin and they start to take things back and move them. And so he asks this one simple question. If you did not now own that, how much would you pay to buy it? And he says, and immediately the stuff starts to move back into the thrift store bin. So the reality is that honestly, there are only a handful of things that we can legitimately hope to do well. And we just have to weed out all the things that we don't want to do well. All right, so...
Well, I was going to say, when you see your point of the goal that was thinking all along, setting realistic goals, isn't that true? So much to just set unrealistic goals. You know, based on, like you said, what we can do. You know, some of us can do, obviously, and more talent than others.
Well, and part of the understanding is to be able to understand who you are. Remember we said that you cannot divorce wisdom from purpose. Each of us is unique, and therefore each of us has a somewhat unique purpose. And what is wisdom for me may not be wisdom in all cases for you. Jim.
Everybody has a talent. Everybody has a talent. At least one. So if you take that and hone it down, and the way that I look at that is, one of my well-built 80-inch motors will outrun a poorly built 120-inch motor all day long. Because that motor doesn't run well. It doesn't run with parts that you put in. But mine was designed and blueprinted for all of the parts that were in. And it'll walk all over that thing all day long. If you blueprint that well, your supply chain, it'll work. But if you don't, and you try to do stuff that you're not equipped to do, yet, you're right, it's not going to run, it won't work, works against itself most of the time.
To put it in a different way, I think most of us have to learn not to have a Walmart mentality. The Walmart mentality says that we can make things so within reach that you can have one of everything. And it will have the quality of a Walmart one of everything too, but we don't see that at the time. So at the end of a life, are you going to want to look back with satisfaction on a few things that you have done extremely well, where you have made an actual difference in life, or are you going to want to look back on the collection of Walmart things that you've done in life, none of which really made a dent in anything?
What is the process of evaluating what is that those things to focus on? That should be a process in that, right?
Can you ask that question again?
This be the process? So now you're doing 15 things, and 15 things weigh you down, and you only have 100% of you. So each 15 thing takes 10%, whatever, which would be more, it would be 150%, or whatever. So now
now it sounds like government math there.
No, but now the machines have to run at 150%.
Go ahead, tell your story. But to narrow it down to, okay, these 15 things, 13 of them really don't matter. Now, how do you focus on the two things that, okay, this is kind of not what I've been ordained to do, but this is part of my talent, and this is how I focus, and this is, you understand what I'm saying? How do you cut down? What is the process of cutting down the other 13?
Well, here is one place, hold on a little bit. Here is one place that you can do that, and this is the hardest place to do it, believe it or not. The hardest place to do this is in advance of committing to the 15 things.
It's called prioritizing.
Well, Okay. Suppose that you want to be the world's greatest biologist or whatever. And suppose you also want to be married. And suppose you also want to have a family. And suppose that you also want to have a nice environment for your family to live in. Can you see where it might be that you couldn't actually be the best at all of them? And so the place to make your choices is in front of. Remember what we've said here on a number of occasions. Most human beings only make a handful of really important choices in their life, and they spend the rest of their lives managing the choices that they've made. Ideally, you marry once. You make that choice. You manage that choice for the rest of your life. So the place to decide is in advance of the fact that you will have to manage the consequence of that choice for years to come. Most people like the idea of having a house. You will have to manage that choice for years and years to come. And the second that you make that commitment, assuming you can't get out of that commitment, and if you have a wife and you have children, you don't want to get out of that commitment. A lot of people later don't do, right? Because they find out that the choice to have a wife and the choice to have kids conflicts with some of the choice that they wanted to have about freedom and other things. And so they start to ditch what they feel is the less important thing. So the time to make the choice is before you have to manage it. Because it's harder to cut later than it is to not have something to cut to begin with.
Well, that falls in line with this, too. I mean, you know, your example of Barbies and Walmart, you know, they're not...
That can't leave the room, incidentally.
They're not going to ship them in the spring. They're going to run that through the chain during Christmas season, right? Generally.
Yeah.
So they're going to maximize their profit potential, use the supply chain management then to do that. So there's certain products that they'll ship first that are going to be more profitable. Right, so that's a matter of them figuring out, all right, how do we want to structure this? Right, so which decision do we make?
And you used a great illustration there that we can tie right into what we were talking about. There's a season for everything in life. Now, God willing, your children will all leave home one day.
18.
Huh?
18, how'd they do it?
Okay.
17 years.
But who's counting, right? Is there an hour meter at your house that's running right now as we speak?
But you were talking about compromise earlier, and I'm not so sure compromise, although we always need to compromise, but we do need to prioritize. You don't even necessarily compromise your goals. I think sometimes compromise, it's too easy for us to do that. We just throw stuff away and we just hack it out of our life. Hold on. Prioritize for a minute. Like budgeting. Give 100% to the littlest bill first. Get that one out of the way, then move to the next one. Then give 100% to that. Get that out of the way. If you prioritize the things that you want to do, you should be able to accomplish reasonably most of what you want to do inside your town level. I think that oftentimes, either we think we're way better than we are, in which case I was doing a victory lesson today, and it says you deceive even yourselves. You think you're way better than you really are. I think a lot of people, that's true. You know, and so we end up falling horribly short. The projects in my home, I read books and books and books and books and books. I'm not an electrician or a plumber. And when I exceed my level of expertise, I pick up the phone and I call one of my boys, yo, come over here. I'm about to make a mess. So there's a way to prioritize and focus on what you want to do. And then inside your town level, and when you exceed your town level,
And incidentally, he brought up another thing. And why is all this important? Because by now, I'm sure a few of you are at least wondering why it is that we're looking at this. Well, the reality is that I don't expect that life in America is going to become less complex as we move forward. As a matter of fact, if you go back several hundred years, you know, we talked about freedom a few weeks ago, but true freedom is the ability to have the resources to do the things that you believe that you should be doing. That includes time as well as wealth. Well, the reality is that going back hundreds of years, people did not have as much free time. I know you'd say, well, I don't have any free time, but you don't have any free time because of the choices that you have made in a lot of cases that have encumbered you with things. Here's the truth of the matter. As there is more option, as there is more choice, we need a greater level of skill about how to manage this. And this really is a spiritual issue. Because with greater choice comes the prospect for greater self-destruction.
100 years ago, you had to kill him.
And it kept you busy for most of the day. So when we talk about this, and it sounds more like a business course than it does a lesson in heart care, this really is heart care. No doubt about it. And your kids will face this and then a little bit more, I believe, as greater options open up. All right, so turn over to James, 5th chapter for a moment. And go right to the end of the chapter. I'm not going to be showing you anything that you haven't seen here before. My brothers, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. All right, so I'd like to expand on that concept a little bit. And I'd say this applies not only to a person caught in sin, but this applies to a person and reaching some of their God-called purposes. If you can help a person to move in the right direction instead of the wrong direction, then you've done real good in life. So as you and I are going through life, if we say that we are acquiring wisdom and understanding, then we should have something to offer. Have you ever noticed, though, that most people don't want wisdom that doesn't fit their plan? Right? Your kids don't really care about your wisdom. They care about your help with getting what they want in life. Go over to Galatians, the 6th chapter. It's basically the same idea. That? While I fumble around here. All right, here we go. Brothers, if anyone is caught in a transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch over yourselves, though, lest you be tempted. So the same basic concept, that we have an obligation to help each other out. Now, who are those that you feel most called to help out? Who are those in your life who you feel most called to shepherd? Because we have an inner circle and then progressively larger concentric circles that move out. And in a very loose sense, we could say we have an obligation to anybody that we meet. But do you know who's at your innermost circle?
Family.
Okay. And then? Anybody?
Friends.
I would think so. If you have a couple of close friends, absolutely. All right, so we see that we have a call to help people to live well. Those closest to us first, and then we move out in those concentric circles. So turn over to Isaiah 6. And here's where we get to the big question. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple, and above him stood the seraphim. Each had 6 wings, with 2 covering his face, and 2 he covered his feet, and with 2 he flew. And one called to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is filled with his glory." All right. Now, that's an interesting parallel. It says, in the year that King Uzziah died. Now, that's both a time stamp, kind of like the way they couldn't reference a calendar. They couldn't say in the year B.C. whatever. So, in this particular year. But there's also an interesting juxtaposition there. That's an awkward word to use, but I couldn't come up with a better one. So, here's King Uzziah, and here's the Lord. So, who is King Uzziah? King Uzziah has this 52-year reign. He co-reigns with his dad for a little while, and then he has an independent reign, and then at the end of his life, his son has to co-lead with him. Does anybody know anything about Uzziah? He's one of those obscure figures that you probably don't know a lot about. Well, it turns out that his predecessor had had some small victories against an enemy. And the northern and the southern kingdom are still not getting along. And so his predecessor, the king of Judah, his father, thinks, well, now I'm pretty much of a big shot because I just had these small victories. And so he wants to go wage war against the northern kingdom, his own people to the north. And he calls out to that king and he says, "Let's come out to the battlefield and meet." Now remember, as a king, you don't only live out your own fantasies, having the right goals. What should your goals as a king be?
Yes.
What's best for the people, right? We did a whole series on that. That those are your to protect your people, to look out for the opportunities, the financial opportunities for your people, to make sure that justice and righteousness prevail in the land. Those are three big things that a king should be concerned about. All right, so instead, he's concerned with satisfying his own ego. I conquered a little over here. I think I'm going to go to the north and conquer. And so the king of Israel sends back this message in the form of a little parable. And it talks about two weddings, and one is a wedding of a thistle to something, and the other is a wedding of some mighty plant. And basically what he says is, you're a little thistle, and be happy that you won a little war down there, but you should stay down in the kingdom of thistledom, and mind your own business down there, lest you regret it. Well, he doesn't. Now, there's a little piece of wisdom that he was given. The opportunity to check his motive and say, well, maybe I should think about this. But instead he doesn't. And so he plows headlong into battle. And it says that the king of Israel takes him captive, moves his army all the way down to Jerusalem, and blows a hole right through the wall in Jerusalem. It's a substantial wall. And it's a substantial hole. And that's the last thing that we really know about Dad. So along comes Uzziah. So Uzziah is actually the opposite. He actually does go out and conquer effectively. And he rebuilds the walls. And he brings prosperity to the people. But here's the problem. Has ego ever gotten the best of you in the middle of doing well? So one day, not satisfied to be the king, he goes into the temple and he wants to also burn incense before the Lord. And he just goes in there and it's like, that's the reign or the domain of the priests. And he has his domain and the priests have their domain. But he thinks he will cross that threshold. And it says that the priests challenge him and say, you shouldn't do this. You really need to go. You need to get out of the temple right now. This is not for you to do. This is in a fit of rage. He's angry. And the moment that he's angry at the priest, it says that leprosy strikes him. And the priest actually notices this, and it says the priest escorts him out of the temple. And he realizes what he's done. Now, this we set up against God.
Did he have a relationship with God at that time?
Here is the way the authors, you know, you can never be totally clear about things. You just have to look at the character of the person based on their behaviors. And he is recorded as being a good king. Did right things. Did good things. And if you look at secular sources, again, you come to a time when that kingdom was prosperous. When that kingdom was solid. And it said that he had a good reputation with all the surrounding areas. In other words, they were at a strong point.
And he understood what the priest was saying. He knew all of that. You know, that wasn't news to him.
Right. So we have two leaders. In the year that King Uzziah died is more than just a date stamp. It is also, here's a human leader. Here's God. And Isaiah gets a vision of what God is like. It says, and the foundations of the threshold shook at the voice of him who called. And the house was filled with smoke. And I said, woe is me, for I am lost. Now we assume that this is probably Isaiah's calling moment. But at that time, prior to that call, who do you think Isaiah respected? A normal king, a normal ruler, a successful ruler. And at this moment he sees God, and he sees God for who God really is. And this is his response. For I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King of the Lord of hosts. And then one of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, behold, this has touched your lips, your guilt is taken away, and your sin is atoned for. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? Who will go for us? And then I said, here I am, send me. And he said, go and say to this people. Now this is interesting. In the year that King Uzziah died, the people are still living a good life. There's prosperity in the land. Everything is good. And so what is the outlook of the people? We're doing God's stuff. We're God's people. God's blessing us. Everything is good. And yet God sees in them something very different. So he says, keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people dull and their ears heavy. And blind their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn and be healed. So is God really saying to the people and to Isaiah more pointedly, I hope they don't turn? Is that really what he's saying? He's pointing out the obvious that people can be surrounded by information and yet they don't notice the right things. People can notice the right things and yet they don't know how to interpret what they see. And people who don't know how to interpret what they see don't know how to change what they want to live for. And so the question that we have to come to is, how do we break this process? Remember we said at every juncture between every one of these things in the supply chain, there is a potential interrupter. So what are the interrupters and how do we break the things that interrupt so that the people that we want to help in our lives can actually acquire the wisdom that will help them to set the right goals in their lives? All right. I'm just not cut out for one of these little music stand things. I need something bigger. So, on the back of your sheet, maybe, if you have a pen, the back of your sheet doesn't have anything on it, so that's where you're going to. And I want us to just look at an agricultural model, because I'll just leave that up there. Because I think most of us as parents, most of us as people who employ people in the workplace, manage people in the workplace, whatever it is, what is our go-to, our default, when we see people not doing something that we know they should be doing?
Tell. Do it ourselves.
What's that?
Do it ourselves.
Well, okay, but both of those are actually options, aren't they? Well, I'll just go to them and I'll tell them. Now, what do you expect when you tell somebody?
They're going to do it.
Of course you do. Are those expectations always met favorably?
No.
All right. So there has to be more to that. So my instinctive response is, you have failed. You've not done something. It should have been obvious to you what needed to be done, but you didn't do it. And so therefore, my assumption is, if I just go to you and tell you, this is what you have to do, why haven't you done it? You're going to do it that way. But don't we all have a lot of experiences that prove that that doesn't always work?
Sure.
So there has to be something more. And Jason said something else. Jason said, well, you know what? I guess I'll just take on the burden of ruling the world and doing all the world's work myself because no one else in the world is quite able to do it the right way. And so if I do it all, it'll all get done right. Now, I know that's not exactly what you said, but if you amplify what you said by all the people in the world, what would that mean? That a handful of people would do all the world's work and everybody else would sit back and watch. Now, surely that's not a desirable outcome because everybody else remains, well, whatever the opposite of wise is. And nobody else knows how to do anything. So we haven't leveraged all of the God-given gifts that are inside of anybody else. So talking by itself isn't enough. Saying, I'll do it all myself isn't enough. What are some of the other things that we do? Well, when talking fails, what do we naturally do? Right, if a little talk, Dave just did some sign language there in the back. If a little talk done in a small way doesn't produce the result that I want, what's the natural assumption?
Talk louder.
More and bigger is always better, right? So have you ever talked to get a result, to inspire others? And then when that didn't work, have you ever yelled to inspire others? And how did that work?
You know what the problem with all that is? I worked at a place, it's like that. They had some temps that came in, and they didn't do what they were supposed to do. And you know, the result is, we all had to work harder. That was the result there. And that was frustrating for us.
Well, now the difference between that And the temps example, what do we assume? One day the temps are going to go home. Tomorrow there might be new temps. So if I invest my time in enlightening these temps, they might be at some other factory tomorrow, and so it's really not going to help me to invest in them. I'm assuming that if you invest in the people, they're people that are going to be with you for a while. All right. If you followed the news at all recently, you know that there is a lot of, we'll say, dryness happening in the West. I don't think dryness actually happens. Dryness is the result of things not happening that need to happen, like rain. So what should the West want?
Rain.
A lot of rain, right? What happens when hard ground, and let's let hard ground represent an unwise person. What happens when hard ground is subjected to a lot of rain? Most of it runs off, doesn't it? Most of it never gets to where it needed to go. And so what would be the process if you were going to take hard, dry ground and restore it to something that was suitable to be tilled?
You're going to stir it up. You're going to get it ready.
And a lot of gradual, slow watering. Maybe months worth of slow watering, as opposed to a mass watering. Now, most of us, when we're parents, what do? We don't have time for slow watering, right? Or at least we don't think we do. And so we do a mass irrigation. Right? We break out the fire hose. And our neighbors know we've broken out the fire hose, right? They can hear the fire hose going on. And in the end, most of that runs off and accomplishes nothing except making you and I feel a little bit better. So let's look at soil. And if you looked at soil and seed as the people that you want to help, and let's look at some metaphors for what we would do. What is the condition of the person who needs wisdom? Where are they? What is broken in this chain? Because that's why we have this. It's not only for your own life. Where is there a link that is broken? What is interrupting that? Okay, so are they lacking information? If it's a 10-year-old you're dealing with, what are you expecting from them? If it's a 20-year-old that you're dealing with, what are you expecting of them? What's their background? Remember, everybody is unique. Everybody comes from a different background. I heard a great interview this week, and a woman was saying that despite the fact that we assume that everyone has the same basic understandings about life, that no two of us have the same background. You weren't raised by the same parents as I was. You weren't raised by the same parents at the same time as your brother or your sister were. Your parents were going through different circumstances. You may have been raised by one parent. I may have been raised by two parents. And on, we didn't go to the same schools. We didn't have the same friends. What is the likelihood that when we arrive at adulthood that we have the same collection of understandings about life? We're going to have some general understandings, but at a core level, here's what I believe. That we dispense a lot of universal wisdom, assuming that everybody thinks the way we do and understands things the way that we do, and they don't. And therefore, what we're dispensing doesn't even feel valuable to them, and they don't know how to process it. So the first thing, and this is the most difficult thing, the first thing about helping people to become more wise, to help them to turn, is we need to take the time to know where they are in this whole thing. See, what I'm doing up here is this. That's all I'm doing. I'm not giving any of you any more understanding. What should I understand? All I'm doing is a knowledge dump right now. That's the best I can do. It's up to you to take the time to mix whatever new you hear with new the... Did I say that right? Yes. Whatever new thing that you hear, mix it with your current understandings. Don't make fun of me. And then make some practical application from it. If this is true, and every person that you want to inspire, to help, to change, is a unique human being, how many people can you realistically hope to help at the same time? Certainly no more than a handful. How much time does it really take to know someone? How many of you feel you know your own kids really well? Now add to that a coworker or two that you're concerned about, or maybe a friend or somebody like that, if the coworker is not your friend. And think about just the amount of time that it takes to know someone. You have to know the soil that you're working with. Is it rock? Does it need to be broken up? See, if you try to plant rock, what's going to happen? Nothing. And what is our temptation? I believe our temptation as human beings, we're all basically sort of semi-compassionate. Or at least we want to be compassionate. And we don't want the rock to experience bad consequences, right? So we want to save the rock from the bad consequences. How does rock get to be not rock? It has to be broken up. So in a human sense, that sounds very painful, doesn't it? Rock has to be broken up. And so one of the things that we, I believe, have to be able to do as friends, as mentors, as parents, or whatever, is simply to control the break. We have to allow people to experience consequences, because consequences are the only way that things ever change, that things ever break. And so our job then becomes to make sure that the rock is not destroyed in the breaking. If you understand what I'm saying. That's the best that we can hope for. If you try again and again and again with all of your best efforts to take the rock and plant good seed in it, nothing is ever going to grow. You have to allow the rock to break. And that is the most painful thing for some of us to deal with, is to watch people that you care about be broken. And all we can do is stand there at the periphery and try to make sure that the break is controlled. Well then, once we get that, what else do we... Now we get some good workable soil. It's soft. Water will penetrate it. What else might be missing?
What you're going to plant.
Okay, so we're going to have something to plant. We assume that we know what we want to plant. But how do we know what we want to plant? So if God has a purpose for this other life that you're working with, what do you need to plant? What you need to plant depends on what God has called them to do. Stories are abundant about parents who give kids wisdom about what they should do based on what? Based on what the parent should have done. Right? So parents give great advice about... Well, the author that I was talking about cutting back the clutter in your life, he says, I was going to law school because my dad told me that the best way to a successful life was to go to law school because it helped you to keep your options open. You could teach law, he said. You could practice law. You could write law. You could do whatever. Go to law school. So he says, I spent the first year of my higher learning heavily invested. He said, I wanted to be the best, so I poured myself into this. He said, at the end of the first year of school, a friend of mine from the States, he's English, a friend of mine from the States invited me to a wedding. And so I went over to the States to this wedding. And the friend made this just innocent comment. He said, isn't it great to be in a free country where you can choose what you want to do? Well, that seemed like an innocent comment. He said, the guy went home to his motel room and he said he couldn't sleep that night because all he could think about was, if I live in a free country and I really can do what I can do, what would I do? And he made a list of all the things that he would do. And he wasn't even thinking about it. And he said he got to the end of the list. And it took him hours to make the list of the most important things that he would do in his life. And he said, and I discovered the one thing that wasn't on the list was going to law school. He said, it was the most profound change in my life, and it was only after I saw that was my father's dream, that was my father's ambition, my father's idea of what I should do. Well, how many of us are giving other people sound advice based on who we're called to be, not on who they're called to be?
I'm going to give you an example. I was fortunate enough to play semi-pro ball for 3 years. I was a pitcher. When my son was born, you know, he played with Silver Creek and everything like that. But he really wasn't, I could tell he really wasn't happy. And I want to play ball. And as much as I've screwed up in decisions and everything, he said, you know what, Dad, I really like soccer. The smartest thing I ever did was to let him go. And he started playing soccer. Loved it much, 100% more than baseball. Ends up going to Newman College, plays on the varsity. His freshman year is the third leading scorer. The smartest thing I ever did was to let him go, not based on what I wanted to do.
And so many parents want to live through their kids. And that was one of the, fortunately, the smartest thing I ever did was just to let him go play soccer. Because that's what he loved. So sometimes you just gotta, you know, you can't live through your kids. I had my days, and I realized that, and I'm done. Now it's his turn. But sometimes you just have to let them go and you know, do it, even guide them.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about soccer, but I got him to people that did and taught him well, and I just sort of stayed out of it. So it all makes sense.
Okay, so we'll move on. So you're broken. Something can grow in you. Something to be planted. But soil without nutrition still can't grow anything. Rock can be broken down into sand, but if the sand doesn't... See, a seed will sprout by itself. But once it takes root, is there anything that it can refresh and nourish itself on? And so there, we can play a role. What are some of the useful general things that people need to know moving in this particular direction? And if you don't know them, like you said, he wanted to play soccer, and so you put him in connection with the people who could teach him how that's... So the seed was there. I'd like to play soccer. I have an interest in soccer. But you weren't the one who could teach him the finer points of how to play soccer, and so you had to hand him off to somebody who could. Well, how long does that process take? I think the most amazing thing about this all is, how long has it taken you to understand everything that you understand today?
Sometimes.
A lifetime, right? Now, what do we expect of the people around us? I'll just give them a knowledge dump and that'll bring them up to speed. What we don't understand is this understanding process. How long? Really, how long does it take for a human being to make the internal mental connections between this idea and that idea and this idea and that idea and have them all come together so that the human being knows how to make good choices? It takes years. We're not very patient gardeners. That's the truth of the matter. All right. One more thing that I'd like us to think about. And that is, what happens? What do we do with our plants when frost, bad wind, horrible rain is expected? What do we do?
Cover them,
protect them, do whatever. There's times when the only thing that we can do, they don't need words, they don't need anything else. It's growing just fine. All it needs is our protection, our covering, so that it continues to grow. And that's a very unglamorous part of this supply chain. Right, we want to be the person with the answers. We want to be the person that has this or that or the other. Sometimes that plant just needs something to protect it from an outside force that's going to destroy it. And so wherever these people are in this whole chain of things, you ask yourself, based on where they are, what they need, and use that soil metaphor. And I think we're pretty good. I'm going to have you out of here on time. But we have some opportunity for some discussion time. If you have anything you'd like to add, anything you'd like to talk about, Dave? Well, maybe one of the things that... I'll be right to you. One of the things that we didn't talk about and we probably should have is to understand that there are people who are going to work against your goals. There are people in life who will be successful only if they've destroyed your good thing. So you talk about that kid. Somebody else has a goal for that kid's life too. Somebody else is going to either use that kid or use that kid to... They don't care about the kid, let's put it that way. Remember what we said the wicked person was? The wicked person is the person who wants something in life, knows that there's going to be consequences for someone else, but doesn't care. And so when you ask the question, how does that kid end up selling drugs? Well, because there was somebody who had a plan for that kid's life. And you can be darn sure that if we don't help those closest to us to have plans for their own lives, somebody else will. And that's why this goals business is more than just cheesy self-fulfillment. This is really important. A goal is sort of like a boundary, a perimeter. If I don't have something to live for, someone else will give me something to live for. Now,
I think sometimes know, we sort of want to control everything with our kids and family and everything like that. But I'll give you another example. When my son was playing ball, he had a hitch in his swing, and he wasn't getting the power that he should have. And I told him, I said, listen, you're not swinging the bat right. And he looked at me like I had three heads, and I knew he wasn't going to listen to me. So I told the other coach. I said, Joe, I said, go talk to Frank. I said, tell him he's got a hitch in his swing. He went and talked to him. My son changed his... Sometimes somebody else has to sort of step in and intervene, and you got to sort of move out of the picture a little bit. And I think that comes with... That's part of wisdom right there, is knowing when to back off and maybe let somebody else take over a little bit.
Yeah.
And sometimes that works.
There was a hand up in the back somewhere. No? Okay. All right. Yes.
Who you are.
Yeah.
And I just wonder for myself, why isn't he able to be receptive to listen?
How old is he?
Give him a couple of years, buddy.
Sometimes they're just a little, you know. Look at all the people in the Bible. I mean, some of them were just absolutely rebellious, and then they got straightened out. And sometimes I hated discipline. My dad was strict on us, but you know what? He kept us out of jail. We knew what was right and wrong. So your son he's going to watch you. He's going to watch you as an example of what you're doing. He's probably not going to listen to you because my kids didn't listen to me. It's what you do. I think it's just the motions you make and the way that you act. And then later on, when they get old enough, they'll sit down and be willing to talk with you. But right now, he's just watching what you do.
Yeah, and let me circle around and talk to another point on that. And so imagine Jesus walking down the street and somebody comes up to him and has a question for him, and Jesus gives him an answer and the guy doesn't like the answer. And that actually happened on a number of occasions. Now, do you picture Jesus being insecure and nervous and saying, well, geez, the guy didn't like my answer. I wonder what I need to do. See, you need to be secure in who you are and okay with who you are, even if people reject the good that you want to give them. And that's hard too. So you and I need... No, yes, there is a balance. I mean, we want to give our best to other people. But if they, at that moment in time, reject it, that's not a reflection of you, on you. That doesn't reveal something bad in you. It simply says that they're not ready somewhere in this chain of things.
Is it really that simple, though? Because I would, just for me, I'm just saying in my own... There's like an evaluation for like self-improvement. Okay, why wasn't this message being able to be received?
Oh, absolutely.
Was there a way?
Sure.
Did I go about it incorrectly? Is it that simple that, okay, they didn't receive it, I guess they're just not ready for it?
I think, and some of you may actually be uncomfortable with what I say next, but I think you see in the process of Jesus' 3-year ministry that there are some things at the beginning of his ministry that he said one way that by the end of his ministry he might have said in a different way because he evaluated his own performance. Paul most certainly evaluated his own performance. We want to evaluate our own performance. We want to be better.
But not let it hinder us.
But it cannot, you cannot be personally wounded if someone doesn't receive the best that you have to give them. And I think that's our tendency as humans, because we're all a little insecure.
You go to a restaurant, the waitress comes up and asks you after you finished your coffee if you want more coffee, and you say no thanks. She doesn't take it personal. She just moves on. And that is the hardest thing to do, is when you're trying to help somebody and they don't...
Well, he can't move on. His kids live in the house. He can't...
I heard one speaker say that, you know, if you talk to people and they don't receive the message, they're just unavailable at that time. And maybe later on they'll be available. And you just got to move on.
And that isn't that one of the central points that Isaiah queries God on? Well, how long? How long do you want me to keep telling these people who don't want to listen and can't see and all that? How long?
God just told him to tell the people.
Yeah. Well, it's until.
That's his assignment. Yeah.
Until. Dave.
Just somebody reflected on this. Don't tell me, show me. I think that our kids need to see that. And there's the biggest piece of wisdom of the young family this guy has up here is that you don't always have to tell them, show them. show them what a man is, show them what a godly person is, show them, because like the other gentleman said, he says, they're not going to always listen. You know what I mean? So just, you got to tell them, but...
It's a slow process.
But always make sure you stand firm in what you're saying, or, you know, and just let them see it. You're a godly man, they'll see it.
And we focused a lot on kids, but if you lead anyone, there's times when all this whole system, this whole process is essential, and we're impatient with people we work with, too.
I've got a picture of Jesus. He poured, gave the rich young ruler the best he could give him, and it was the best. And then he decided on his own, I don't want that. He turned and walked away. You'll see Jesus running down the road.
I have a tendency to do that.
Or imagine this. So at the end of 2.5 years, we'll say, of Jesus putting information, sharing wisdom with his followers, his closest followers, the ones who were going to be the apostles, who would carry on this movement. He says, there's a lot that you're not ready for. In other words, in 3 years' time, minus a little bit, it may seem as if I've given you a lot, but you don't even understand half of what I've given you, and there's so much more that I would like to have given you that you're not ready for yet. Now think about that, 3 years. And we're not talking about 3 years after Jesus came home from work and he had an hour around the dinner table to talk with people. It was 3 years of reasonably intensive. We share life most of the time. We walk places to get walk. Right? We don't jump in the... We walk places together. What do you do when you're walking 15 miles for the day? I mean, apart from kick sand and stones. You talk. You talk a lot. And at the end of 3 years, he said... The counselor is going to come and he's going to make a lot of the things that I've said that you still don't understand, he's going to make them more real, and he's going to give to you additional things from me that I still haven't even begun to share with you because you weren't ready. So if people who had dedicated their lives to following Christ weren't ready at the end of 3 years of full life training, how much time is it going to take for us to pour something into people that we only have for an hour or two here and there?
This, you know, wisdom's a funny thing, and I made a note, you know, is wisdom taught or is it told? Right? Because you can speak of your wisdom to somebody, but until they actually go through that process...
Yeah, that's knowledge. Everything that you speak that you think is wisdom is still up here as knowledge. It's facts that you give them, pieces. It's not until it is personalized. Understanding is what's inside the individual experiencing it.
It comes through experience.
Yes. Knowledge is what you share. The scriptures refer to it as wisdom shared, but truthfully, we share knowledge. It doesn't become understanding until it is inside the other person. And that's outside of your control. That's the unsettling part about this. Everything that you do is outside of them. It is up to them how they receive it and what they do with it. And part of that is completely outside of your control because you don't know what their background is and what they already understand. And then, like John said, as a result of that, they're going to go through this process. They're going to experience the accomplishments or the failures or whatever it is. And then they're going to have to decide what they want to do with that.
I just hope what my mom said isn't true. She was used to say, wait till you have kids. Your son's going to be just like you.
Well, you know, when they use that, and that is such a common saying, or the old, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree one, right? Well, of course, that's because they're immersed, right, in a family situation. They're immersed in a culture of which you're one of the predominant influencers. So they're going to be a little like that. But that phrase also describes something else. Aren't we all a little bit, like when you say, well, my kids didn't listen to me. Right? They had to get the same information from somebody else. Is there a man who has kids in the room who can't relate to that? I was blue in the face talking to my kids. They went next door and the neighbor's dad said something and it's like the kid comes back and he's like a new person.
Yeah.
No, all I'm saying is that...
Kid, I just said that to you. Why does the neighbor's dad say that to you and now you listen?
Well, that's where you got to be secure.
Just like John said, can you see Jesus running down the street after the guy? No. No, you don't. All right. I think we've wrapped this up pretty well. So.